glad to be here.
Now, what have the last 5 years of Joko Widodo's presidency been like?
It's been an interesting time for Indonesia. Joko Widodo, who's better known as Jokowi in Indonesia, was the first non-elite candidate ever to hold the presidency. So people had a lot of high hopes for what he would do in terms of moving Indonesia forward in the areas of infrastructure, in the areas of social welfare and so on. He's made some significant contributions in some of those areas. He's had a big focus on infrastructure. There's been a lot of road building, MRT in Jakarta, and people are really responding to this, which opens up the economy, especially in some of the more isolated areas. He's also done some great work on health and education, but there have been some concerns about human rights. He reactivated the death penalty for drug traffickers, that he hasn't stepped in when there's been persecution of LGBT Indonesians, and there have been some other issues around the security approach to social movements.
Yeah, at the start he was viewed as quite a tolerant and progressive politician. So do you think he's become more conservative in the recent years?
I think he's had to become more conservative. I mean, Indonesia doesn't have a dominant political party. There are many political parties in the legislature, and presidents need the support of coalitions. So to get that support, you need to play to other people's interests. The other thing is, generally, Indonesia has become a more socially conservative society as a whole over the last couple of decades. So there's a lot of pressure on a candidate to make sure they're looking after the interests of that conservative majority. And in that case, this case, it means that he's had to become more overtly pious in his practice of religion, but also to accommodate quite a few people on the right who have very socially conservative views.
Yeah, of course. Now, speaking of religion, Widodo chose a Muslim cleric as his running mate for the campaign. Why do you think this might have been a controversial choice?
Well, it depends from whose perspective whether it was controversial. It was very good politics. In the 2014 election, the opposition candidate, Prabowo Subianto, really captured the Islamic right. And this was a big problem for Jokowi. There was a lot of fake news about him being a Christian Chinese, both of which holds stigma for the general population in Indonesia. He was seen as not being very pious and so on. So by both adjusting his own personal practice, he went on the Hajj, he presents in a more pious way these days, bringing on a cleric who's the leader of a very big Muslim organisation, quite a moderate one, but a very big one, took religion out of the debate to a large extent. So there was a lot less difference between the two candidates on religion in this election.
Right. Now, looking at the other candidate, Prabowo Subianto, what kind of politician is he?
They're both populist. So Prabowo is an interesting guy. As you said, he's a former military man. He was the head of the special forces, in fact, at a time where the military was deeply involved in human rights abuses. He's a businessman, but he's really made a pitch for the popular vote. So saying he'll improve standards of living, he's got a deal with one of the big trade unions, and saying he'll support the Indonesian economy and the people who run it as a primary part of his platform.
Right. Now, what were the main policy points in this campaign?
Well, again, there wasn't that much difference, really. Both of them are economic nationalists, so they both of them were really fighting for... They had some differences on infrastructure. As I said before, infrastructure has been a major item of Jokowi's platform. What was at stake was how they should fund it. So Jokowi was much more willing to take on foreign debt to fund it, whereas Prabowo was saying that foreign debt was a bit of a threat to Indonesia's economy. So that was one key difference. Other than that, Jokowi's had more emphasis on the digital economy. But really, there's not so much difference. They're both fairly socially conservative, both saying that they'll improve welfare for poorer Indonesians, and both saying that the Indonesian economy really needs to be a primary focus of their presidencies.
Right. And how important was religion in this campaign?
Well, as I said before, it was both more important and less important. It was more important because it was really taken as a given. Your listeners may not know, but Indonesia is 87% Muslim, but it's a pluralist society. The constitution recognises five state religions. So there's a 13% minority who clearly are concerned about the extent to which Islam becomes the primary focus or the primary lens in Indonesia. And in 2014, that was a really divisive factor. There was a big difference between the candidates. But as we've already discussed, in 2019, Jokowi very cleverly took religion out of the debate by taking on the cleric as his running mate and really neutralising the debate around who is a Muslim candidate or who's the better Muslim candidate. So there was still plenty of stuff on social media that was claiming that one or the other was better, but on the whole, it became much less of an issue than it was 5 years ago.
Right, right. Now, the ABC reported that thousands of pre-marked ballots in support of Joko Widodo were found in a Malaysian warehouse. Now, are there any concerns about the legitimacy of this election?
I mean, given its size, the Indonesian elections and the complexity, I mean, we're talking, you know, 190 odd million voters, and they have a voting rate of around 80% this time around. So a lot of people. It's also a huge country and it's on many different islands. So it's always very complex. And whenever you have complexity, you have room for corruption. But in general terms, it's not too bad for a country of that size. One of the main issues in the last election was actually vote shifting within parties. Indonesia has, like we do in the Senate, you can pick a number of candidates from the same party. And so parties would take those votes and give them to one of the candidates, the party cadre, rather than some of the people who had been brought in. In terms of irregularities like the ones you've described, I think, of course, something like that will happen at some level in Indonesia, given the size of the election. But I think most people have a reasonable level of confidence in the process.
Right. Now you mentioned that there are 190 million people able to vote, and there's a people are most likely to vote, essentially, like 80%. Moving towards the most likely. So what are the challenges of holding an election for basically 190 million people with an 80% votership?
Well, let me give you a few more stats to start us off. So there's 190 million odd voters. There were 245,000 candidates, for memory, for about 20,000 positions, because it wasn't just the presidential election that was being held. It was also the legislative elections for national, provincial and local levels. There were about 800,000 polling stations. So, and as I said before, these are scattered across a huge number of islands. Some of them have to be in very remote places. They're helicoptered in. And, yeah, the logistics of that are just mind-blowing, right? It's just so... And it's all done in one day. I mean, India, has a bigger election, but it's done over several weeks. So when you think about that challenge, it's quite amazing that it happens at all.
Yeah, like that's... it's mind-boggling. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michelle. It's been really interesting talking about this.
You're very welcome.